Good evening, everybody. Tonight's class is dedicated for the ninth Yahrzeit of our Chief Rabbi, Rabbi Yaakov S. Kassin, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the fourth of Tevet, by his granddaughter, Marcel Hannan. We love all our sponsors. They get these tapes out. We could always use a new one. If you're planning to sponsor a tape, just dial 718-375-1023, ask for Rika. Good evening, everybody. Tonight's class is dedicated for the ninth Yahrzeit of our Chief Rabbi, Rabbi Yaakov S. Kassin, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the fourth of Tevet, by his granddaughter, Marcel Hannan. We love all our sponsors. They get these tapes out. We could always use a new one. If you're planning to sponsor a tape, just dial 718-375-1023, ask for Rico. I love this time of year because we get involved with Yosef and his brothers and the Musar. Each of the activities, each of the incidents, you know, Rabbi Miller, Alav Shalom, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, once said, you can tell how important the subject is by how much space the Torah devotes to it. And here's a story, very well known, that covers four parashiyot. Imagine, a month, we're reading the story of Yosef. We're up to a very climactic point in the story. It's actually super dramatic. Yehuda pleads for the return of Binyamin, in whose sack the magic goblet of the Egyptian ruler was found. It was actually planted there. And subsequently was discovered by the Egyptian officers. The way the Midrash tells us, he at times threatens and at times begs the ruler, the viceroy. And the heartrending plea that breaks Yosef's toughness is when Yehuda describes the love and attachment of his elderly parent, Yaakov, for the youngest brother, Binyamin. And Yehuda claims that should the brothers return without the remaining son of Rachel, the only remaining son of his dear wife Rachel, who had departed on the road, the sorrow, said Yehuda, will definitely kill Yaakov. Yosef, hearing this, empties the room of all outsiders, all non-family members, and he draws his brothers close and says, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, is my father still alive? The brothers, who were described previously as Giborim, she says the reason why they came in through separate gates was they were very good looking and very well built, strong, powerful people. And they didn't want to be noticed, so they came in from 10 separate gates of Egypt. These powerful men faint in shock. Yosef consoles them. And then after getting close to them a little bit, he instructs them that he wants them to bring Yaakov and his family down to Mitzrayim, to live in Egypt. That's the scene, very famous scene. The Midrash comments, it's a very famous Midrash also, Abba Kohen Abadela Omer. Abba Kohen Abadela says, Oilana miyomadin, oilana miyomatochecha. Woe is to us from the day of deen, justice, judgment.
Oy lanu miyom tzorchecha, woe is to us from the day of reproof. And he describes why there's such a woe. Yosef, kitanam shel shivatim haya, was the youngest of the shivatim. V'lo hayu echav yecholim la'amod b'tochachto. And these powerful men, his brothers, were not able to stand his reproof. Says the Midrash, that's what it means when it says, V'lo yachelu la'anot oto ki nevalu mitpanav. The Pasuk tells us they weren't able to answer him because they were afraid of his face, just looking at him. Says, Abba Kohen Bardela, V'chisheyavo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Hashem himself comes, V'yochiyach, and he should reprove lechol echad v'echad, each individual, Lefi ma shehu, according to what that individual is, al achat kama v'chama. How much more so is the fear going to be? The Baalei Musar have spilled a lot of ink on this little midrash. We'll start tonight with the Or Yahel. Yehuda, Reb Hassman, Tzatzal. He points out that a person without the incisive eyes of Torah scholars, without the Einei Ha'edah, those that advise us, would, if he saw this scene, probably faint. Well, maybe not faint, but run home excitedly and tell his family and friends of the dramatic events that we just described. And eventually, lie down and go to sleep like any other night. What a great thing I saw! Wow, fuck, I couldn't believe it! Yosef, the brothers, he revealed himself. Fuck, yes, after he tells the story, God, I think I'll have a glass of milk and go to sleep. So. Our rabbis, however, react to this story in trepidation and fear. What do they say? Oy lanu, woe is us, we can't handle it. Miyom adin, from the future day of judgment, oy lanu miyom tzorchecha, from the day when Hashem's going to stand us up and reprove us. He in fact compares it, the difference between Chazal's reaction and another regular person's reaction, to two men who go to a, show of some newly developed technologies. One is in the business of whatever the, let's say, the garment business, the factory, and it's new sewing technology, a new pressing technology, new kinds of machines. And the other friend is just, hey, there's nothing to do today, let's go down to the Javis Center and see what they got. You know, just going by to see what they have. Now both, when they walk through, are initially very impressed by what the eye sees. But the casual observer soon forgets. But the expert who's in that business that this exhibition was about won't be able to sleep or eat until he analyzes, studies, and reviews all the details of what he sought to show. He'd want to understand what these new developments are about and what they could do for his business, because they're vital to his business and his expertise in his trade. A person who is a casual observer of the Pesukim of the Torah, as compared to Chazal, our sages, who are experts in the business of Torah, who understand that it's the blueprint for the world, the outline of history, they look at it differently. So let's take a closer look like they would. What did Yosef say that's so frightening? Hi, I'm your brother. doesn't sound so earth-shattering. The New York Times with the story might skip the quote. Great scene at the palace. Joseph reveals himself to his long-lost brothers. More to come tomorrow. But to say it's fantastic, whoa, wow, oy, no. He said, I am Yosef, is my father still alive? Where is the reproof? In fact, when they get a little long-faced, a little depressed, he tells them, Lamma ta'atsiru? Well, what are you depressed about? Starts to console them. So the question the Yahel has, in the name of Chazal, what's the woes to us from the day of this and the day of that? Doesn't seem like that's the scene. And Rav Chasman Zatzal answers, the revelation itself, the words, I am Yosef, this is the powerful, frightening reproof with which he hit them. Because this was a total contradiction to everything they thought and believed for 22 years leading up to this moment. From the day they sold him to the day he revealed himself. They thought that their sale of their young, frightened 17-year-old brother to that caravan of Midianites headed for Egypt was enough to nullify his dreams and fantasies of glory. His idea that eventually one day they would bow down to him. And that was their motivation on that day when they dipped the ripped shirt in the blood of a goat and brought it to their father and he said, oh, Torah, Torah, Tarot, Tarot. He was ripped apart by an animal. And suddenly, in one instant, they realized Yosef's dreams are true. Yosef's dreams are not only true, that's Hashem's plan. And their plans, zilch, nothing. Imagine the psychological pain these holy tzaddikim must have felt when they realized they were wrong. Now the truth is, all of us, well, maybe I shouldn't talk about you. Me. I suffer from a human weakness which can lead, maybe under different circumstances, to a similar moment. So Oyahel says, Hare kol derech ish yashar be'enav. Everyone sees their own behavior as correct. I did it beyond reproof. Vinimsa damchai kol yamav olech umchashev lenafsho ki tzadik hu bedino. Everyone holds, I'm right. Ever run into that problem? I have it all the time. You have the problem? Never. You're never right, or you're always right? I'm always right. Listen to two children fight. Listen to a husband and wife disagree. When the boss chews out an employee and she leaves the office, sits down back at her desk, what does she tell her friend? He doesn't know what he's talking about. The best one he got. I don't know why he yells at me. Without me, you know what this business would be? He's going to be sorry when I'm not here. I'm right. A person thinks, Sadiq ubidino, I'm the one who's correct. Umone shivhema alotav. He counts off his qualities. He praises himself. V'sofer sechar mitzvotav. He counts the rewards for his good deeds. Those good deeds that are waiting for him or her in his or her place in Olam HaBa. I call this the I'm okay syndrome. And I have a problem with it, which I'm sure none of you have, but at least feel for me. I'm not so bad, am I? At least that's what I tell myself. You see, a person justifying his or her actions is a common malady. And it stems from many reasons. I'll give you one of the best ones. One of the best reasons that a person justifies their own action. I did my best. I tried so hard. If a person suddenly realizes a flaw in character, a failure of the human condition, that person immediately excuses by saying, I did the best I could. For example, let's take someone, a male who has upon himself the obligation, Vagito, Abo, Yomam, Valaila, to constantly learn Torah day and night, to succeed in the job of incorporating the Torah's lessons into your being. And the most common excuse is, what can I do? Hashem didn't give me the memory that he blessed Chacham Avada Yosef Shalita with. He didn't give me the analytical powers that the Torah giants seem to have as a natural, as they analyze, question, and clarify the most complicated details of halakha. I think most of us would just say, you know, I am not a Torah scholar. I wasn't born sharp enough. In fact, that's one of my objections. I see a lot of biographies, especially children's books about the Gedolim. And it seems like, you know, he knew Shas when he was 8, he was writing books when he was 11, and by the Bar Mitzvah, he, you know, published a set, 24 volumes of his writings, you know. You figure, oh, well, if I was like that, I was, I guess, you know. I was in remedial reading at the age of 12. No wonder I'm not a Talmid Chacham. They still have remedial, they have to do new names for all that stuff, like, right? Resource room and stuff. We just had the dumb kids who couldn't read, you know. Yeah. Now it's a condition that has initials. UPT, IST, ADD. This kid's not wrong with him. He just has, like, has alphabet soup. Much more genteel society. We just flunked them. Now in Tanah de Eliyahu, there's a very, 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 very famous story about the travels of Eliyahu Navi. Pamahat, says Eliyahu Navi, Hayiti me'alechem makom le'makom. I was traveling from place to place, and I find a guy who didn't have any knowledge of Torah Pesukim, not Mishnah, and certainly not Gemara, and he was a happy-go-lucky type of joker. And I said to him, Bini, my son, Ma ata mashiv meshiv lavicha shvashan yomadim. What are you going to answer Hashem when you go up to the Yomadim, to the Day of Judgment? You don't know Torah. You're in retail. He tells him, Rebbe, you know what I'm going to tell Hashem? So Eliyahu Navi speaking. This is his friend, or the man he ran into. He says, Rebbe, Yeshli Divarim Shanima, I got an answer. They didn't give me this mental capacity when I was born that I should sit and learn and develop in Torah. So Eliyahu Navi says, that's possible. Not everybody's a genius. What do you do for a living? He tells them, I'm a fisherman. Sayyad. Fisherman. He tells them, Mini Midach, who taught you how to fish? Who told you how to make nets? Who taught you how to throw it into the ocean, where and how, and drag it slowly in to catch, maximize your catch? He answers, Rebbe, Rebbe, my teacher, my rabbi. For that, they gave me a decent amount of intelligence. I got a talent for that. And so the Al Navi says, you know what I answered him? To take flax and make yarn into rope, to make rope into a net, to make a net, go into the ocean at the right time and draw the fish and catch the catch. That they gave you. And yet the Torah says, Karol Elecha Davar. The Torah is very close to you. V'ficha, v'avicha, so that's in your heart and your mouth, not so far. For that, they didn't give you any intelligence. Immediately, the young fisherman who had been wasting his life away groaned. He sighed. Said Eliyahu Navi, Bini Amatilo. I said to him, my son, Al Yera Lecha, don't let it depress you. Ela Kol She'ar Bnei Adam Ba'olam Meshivim Teshuvah Zo. The answer you gave me is the most popular answer to that question. You didn't make it up. You're not the first with that excuse. What can I do? I wasn't blessed. I'm not gifted. I can't give tzedakah because I don't have enough money. I can't learn because I'm not smart enough. I can't this, I can't that, but it's not my fault. With what they gave me from Shamayim, I'm doing my best. Says Eliyahu Navi, Aval, however, Ma'asehem Mochihim Alehem. True, that's what most people answer. But most people, their own behavior contradicts their claim. The dust continues, but I think the point we want, we got. The words of Eliyahu Navi stand as an answer to all our excuses for non-performance of the mitzvot. And it stands as an answer for the lack of achievement in the development of our spiritual selves. If we treat the physical things we love with the same excuses and rationalizations that we testify, we attest to the veracity of our behavior in regard to the spiritual lack of achievement. But if we overcome obstacles, if we don't accept our lack of ability, if we don't take the I did my best attitude in our physical pursuits, then we demonstrate in our behavior a contradiction which is inexcusable. Beis HaLevi, Beis HaLevi, Rav Mibrisk, he says someone who doesn't give charity thinks he doesn't have the means. He has the upkeep of his home, he has tuition, cars, insurance, and those are the absolute necessities. But if we look at what the halakha requires, we'll see, it says, even ani hamitpanes min hatzedakah. An ani, a poverty-stricken person who lives off of tzedakah, must give tzedakah. So the claim is an excuse. You ever make excuses? I never do. Let me tell the truth. You make excuses? You don't make excuses. Certainly not. Only I make excuses. But Hashem looks at everything in context. Our rabbi says, is the Beit Halevi, En adome onesh ashir akofet yadom tzedakah, the punishment awaiting a person who's rich and tight-fisted, holds back the money from charities, is not the same punishment as the one for the poor person, the one without all those financial means to give tzedakah. Depends who you are. You're required to do the mitzvot, keep the commandments, but depending on your pekel. By now you guys should know what that means. What's the pekel? You know what the pekel is? Yeah, what? The bundle. The little hobo's bundle that we're given. I like to picture the hobo walking down the street with the stick with the little bag tied on the back. That's the pekel. That's what he's got. So, everybody got a different set of talents, shortcomings, environmental pluses and minuses, familiar ties and connections. You got a rich uncle? I do. Does that make that? I don't know. Maybe that helps. Got to work with it. Whatever you got. So Hashem takes everything into account and says, okay, here's the mitzvah called tzedakah. How do you perform? But. Forget the but. On your level, how did you perform? Based on what you had, what you were given, how did you perform? If in the heavenly judgment, they see you spending on designer names rather than generic brands, if they see you leaving Bergdorf with a package rather than Conway, And then somebody knocks on the door and you say, sorry, I can't give you. I don't have. The judgment is not the same. In the heavenly judgment, if they see unnecessary spending on things, things that are needed for you to satisfy your physical desires, to satisfy honor, to fight in a dispute, or other non-kosher uses of money. And they point out to the person in Shamayim how those things that you listed before, your real needs and responsibilities, didn't limit your ability to do the mitzvot. Now we understand one explanation of the statement with which we began. Abba Kohen Badela Omer, Oy Lanu Yom Adin, etc. And then he says, Lechisheyavo HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'yochiach Lechol Echad V'Echad, when Hashem comes and He reproves each and every individual Lefi Ma Shehu, according to what that individual is. He doesn't expect you if you don't have the mental capacity to be a giant in Torah. But He expects you to learn according to your ability. He doesn't expect you to give away millions of dollars if you don't have it. But He expects you to give your tzedakah to the amount based on your financial ability and in the way that Harambam and others tell you you should give tzedakah, as far as with a smile secretly checking out and all the details. The ultimate reproof is the self-contradictory behavior. You know, it says you're supposed to learn Torah all the time. So you can go up to heaven and tell you, hey, Mark, you learn Torah all the time? No, you don't understand. I'm going to work. You're right. Yeah, I'm going to work. He went to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Some people work Sunday, some people don't. Yeah, but look about, no, at night, no, at night. I have a certain amount of time to eating dinner, lunch, breakfast. Oh, yeah, I'd eat meals, good. Doesn't count. Unless you want to put a book by the table. Good habit. Especially when you're eating alone instead of the magazine or newspaper a lot of people like to eat with. Hey, I sleep. Man, I got sleep. I get tired. Wow, we just used up about 20 hours a day. Maybe a little less, more. So what'd you do with the other 4 or 5 hours? What'd you do? Look. You know something? I'll give you the weekday. What'd you do on Sunday? How'd you spend your Shabbat? Let's, what the guy used to say, let's go to the videotape. Let's see what you did on Shabbat. Did you learn on Shabbat when you didn't have to do this and that and the other? When you were released from earning a living, from paying bills, from your yoga class and your spinning class, and you had some time. Now, there's a lot of chassidim I know. I don't mean the guys with the round hats or fur. I mean guys, really, they hear about a mitzvah and they do it umpteenth degree. And they heard Shena b'Shabbat ta'anu. The Rashi Tevot, the mnemonic for the word Shabbat is Shena, sleep. The Shabbat on Shabbat, ta'anug, is a pleasure. And it says, Vekarata la Shabbat oneg. There's a mitzvah called oneg Shabbat, to enjoy the Shabbat. And therefore, if I'm not eating, I'm sleeping. What a mitzvah. And a lot of Hasidim in that mitzvah. You know anybody like that? Now in the winter, unbelievable. If they're up at 7 p.m., it's a miracle. But what do you want? It's a mitzvah. Come home from shul, lunch, mitzvah. I go straight to sleep. Do you know it's also a mitzvah to learn on Torah? On Shabbat? Now, if a person would learn Torah on Shabbat, and even more so, if a person on a Sunday morning would not use the gifts Hashem gave that person, my wife, my husband, my children, the gifts He gives you, that's the excuse for not living up to responsibility. And they learned, that person learned, Hashem would say, you know, Chazit. I don't know that word in Nebuch. Unfortunately, it was poor guy, yeah. It really means poor guy, but it's the same idea. He's right. He didn't have to work, he didn't have to wish, he didn't have car insurance, he didn't have all those things. Look what he does with his free time. He learns. I'll give him credit in the working time for learning. His excuse is well founded. But if that's not true, and we play the videotape, and we have all kinds of activities, which I remain nameless, because once I say golf, people play golf don't like me. If I say softball, people play softball don't like me. If I say this, people do that don't like me. If I say this, the other guy don't like me. The ladies don't like me. The men don't like me. I like to be liked. I'm like everybody else. I won't name all the things, all the shtuyot that people get involved with, especially the Torah, the TV. Oh my goodness. Or surfing. Not in the ocean, but the web. I'm not surfing the web, I'm just shopping. For 17 and a half hours a day. Till 4 in the morning. So that when Minyan comes, it's not a yard site. Doesn't Landau have a 1:45 Shachrit Minyan in the afternoon? I know guys in that minyan. They're regular. No. He's ready to go. He thought 12:30 was the latest one. Mark, please. What a boom to mankind, huh? All right. So you got my point. Hashem looks at how you are. He compares it to how you could be. He looks at what you do with your free time. He looks at what you do with what you have. And then all your excuses are air. Lefimashu. Oy lanu miyom adin. Oy lanu miyom atochecha. Woe is to us when this judgment, when this spotlight is put on our head. How great will the fear be? How great will the embarrassment be when Hashem comes to judge each person? Lefi ma shehu, according to what the person is. Speaking of lefi ma shehu, there's another way to explain it. This is, according to the Zohar, one of the most painful punishments and the Shema could feel. Lefi ma shehu. everyone will be shown. Some say it's when the casket's being carried. What he or she was really capable of achieving spiritually. They show you what you could have been, and you know what you are. Show you how great the neshama can become, or could have become. And when the person measures the great distance between one accomplished and what one could have accomplished, tiyaserech ra'atech u'shuvotayech tochichuch. That's Yisudim. That's affliction. The person himself or herself will recognize the sin of lack of success, the improper use of the gifts given by Hashem. And this recognition alone is the greatest punishment in Olam Haba. I didn't say that, or Yahel said that. Now there's another excuse people use besides I did my best. The I'm okay syndrome. There's the ends justifies the means syndrome. Or I was really doing it for a good purpose. I meant well. Don't you mean well? You don't look like a wicked person. You mean well. I saw you at work, right? So you mean well. Your boss told me you're a very good girl. He told me, behind closed doors, he told me not to tell you, and look, I told you. But you know that. In Sichot Musar of Chaim Shmulevitz, Zechut HaLikra Bracha says, U'be'emet, truly, harbe ma'asim shoseha adam, many actions that a person does, the chelek gadol pulotav, a great majority of them, the person themselves knows it's not so great. It's not on the up and up. It's not the best I could do. Ella, instead, rather than admit it, we come up with a rationalization. Not why I failed, but why I did it that way. You don't understand, boss. I got a good reason. And according to that excuse maker's opinion, at least, Hatachlit Matira HaPe'ula. The end justifies the means. But woe is to that person when he or she sees even that important purpose, that desired goal is not achieved. And what's left is the act of failure, the ma'aseh. Ha-ma'aseh, says Rav Chaim, asher afu modeh she'enu agun ve'enu yafeh. The person themselves agrees, it's not so right. Not so proper. I only did it because. But then when the action stands alone without the desired result, it don't look so good. The brothers had a purpose in the sale. Let's see what's going to happen chalomotav with his dreams. We're going to sell him. And we're going to make sure he doesn't end up to be a viceroy or a king or a ruler. Nid'eh, let's see now that we sold him. And when he says, Ani Yosef, they went into shock. Didn't work. And now what are they left with? A ripped, bloody shirt that they took to their father, his brother that they sold. And they realize that's not what Hashem had in mind. It's not what Hashem wanted. And the Beit HaLevi, Rav Chaim Shalevitz says, Le'olam in ma'aseh ha'adam po'alim et ha'tachlit. It's not the behavior and the deeds of the person. Never is it that brings the conclusion. The purpose is brought about by Hashem. And therefore he concludes, Achein lamito shadavar en al adam lachshov cheshbono. The person should not sit and calculate based on what I want to happen. What a person should do, live up to your responsibilities, your duties of behavior and the duties of the heart. Do what the Torah tells you, do what the Shulchan Aruch tells you, the outcome, the Yada Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's in Hashem's hand. Then he hits us with a doozy. Umi shesavu shehu ba'atzmo poel tachlit al yedei ma'asav. The one who thinks that he's the one who brings about, we call the end of the day, the bottom line, through his or her deeds. That's like someone saying one of the worst phrases a person can attest to. Kochi ve'otzem yadi asali et ha'chayil hazeh. I did it. Asur lomar ken. It's forbidden to say, I did it. Not only in material pursuits, but even in the spiritual pursuits. In fact, he explains, the phrase of the Gemara, Yagata Umatsata Ta'ami. If you toil and you find, believe. If someone says in regards to Torah learning, I struggled, I toiled, I found the answer, you should believe them. That after all the work and effort the person put in, trying to find the answer in Torah, the acquisition of the answer is actually a matzia. You know what that is? Matzah, he found it. What do you mean you found it? I learned it. No, you didn't learn it. You found it. It takes toil to finally. I walk down the street, I see a wallet, I pick it up. That's toil. No, I got to work a week and wait for Friday, get my silly little check and go to the bank and find out it's not enough. That's toil. That's earning, right? Says the Gemara, Yagata Umatsata. You toil, and Hashem gives you a present, but you find the answer. That's the reward for the effort. And the same is true of the physical, material world. A person goes to work, yigia kapecha ki tochel, you use your hands and you toil with them so that you can eat. Ashrecha v'tov lach, Hashem gives it to you. So his basic conclusion is, our contribution is merely effort. And our effort contributes absolutely nothing to the result. Therefore, it's called Yagata, you tried, Umasata, you said. Because only Hashem produces results. Therefore, now that this well-known idea is repeated for us, what's the bottom line? All our deeds and our efforts must be 100% Beit Yosef Black culture. 100% pleasant, 100% right. And then Hashem will give the proper result. In fact, since our activity has no real effect, it only evokes for us, it invokes for us the Atah Dishmaya, heavenly assistance. Therefore, the more a person does, the more effort a person puts in spiritual pursuits, the more blessing he will find, the more answers. And therefore, there's no limit to what a person could do. You know, there was a day, a very famous day, when Aharon was commanded to consecrate the Levi'im. In one day, he lifted and waved 22,000 men like a lulav. What are you making a face? You never heard of that? He did it. Vayanef Otam Aharon. He waved them like a lulav. He picked each one up. Korach's wife made fun of him. 24 hours is 1,440 minutes. If he was up the entire 24 hours, that enough would be a feat. It would be 15 Levi'im every minute. And if it was a 12-hour day, if he was in the union, the Kohen's union, and he was going out to work, a 12-hour day, that would mean he would pick up, wave in all directions, assuming average weight, I don't know, the desert weight, but they're pretty large people, but let's keep them minimal, 180 pounds. 30 of them per minute. How's that, all you spinners out there? Some workout yoga fans. Right? But he wanted to do it. So he put in the effort. Because that's what he was commanded to do. And Hashem gave him the strength to accomplish it. And Aharon knew. At the end of the day, he didn't start selling licenses to sweatshirts that said Aharon the Superman. He knew he had nothing to do with it. Let's go back a little bit. The contradiction in behavior is our problem. The contradiction in a person's behavior will be the number one prosecution on each person's individual judgment day. And the embarrassment and the pain of what you could have been, that reality, that truth, is one of the most brutal punishments a soul can suffer. And the realization of what one could have possibly achieved, it's a pain the soul will have to bear. And overcoming our own self-deception is one of the most difficult tasks, the job of a lifetime. Our good friend Baruch Hashem, Mashmuel Pinchasi Shalita, explains that everyone is made up of opposite properties. Tov, good. Ra, evil. And what's astounding is that both the good and the evil rule over the person's behavior simultaneously. The struggle. And he says, Ela kol she'al ha'adam mutar lalech b'tzura ikvit. What's our job? And they say, in the shipping business, to steady the course. Not to waver. To see the light of emet and grab onto it. In other words, we should be like Yaakov Avinu. A basic consistency. Ola tamid. Never changing, never bending. Yisrael comes from the word Yashar El, straight. In the famous test of truth, when Eliyahu Navi brought everybody to Har HaKarmel, to Mount Carmel, and he told them, listen, we have these Avodah Zarah priests called Nevi'ei Baal, and we have me. And he tells the people, you know what's wrong with you guys? At matay atem posechim ashtei aseipim. How long are you going to waver back and forth, sitting on the fence? One day Hashem, one day the Baal, one day the Baal, one day Hashem. One of the greatest dangers to a Yehudi is to be wishy-washy. To be split personality. What was Eliyahu Navi telling them? He tells them, we're going to have a test. And if the Baal is the winner, the Abu Dazara, the idol, serve him. And if Hashem is the winner, serve him. Can Eliyahu Navi tell people to serve the Baal? But what does he want? But he's telling him, guess what? This back and forth will get you nowhere. Make a choice. What he meant was, even if you chose to worship the Avodah Zarah, the idol worship, that at least there'd be a chance and a possibility that one day you'd wake up, reform, make the teshuva, go the other way. But if a person, in good conscience, can do mitzvot sometimes, and averot sometimes, can do both, by doing the mitzvah, you're bribing yourself. You're saying, I'm not so bad. All the bad that I did is covered by all the good that I do. And if that's the way one feels, the chesed I do allows me not to be strict with Shabbat. The tzedakah that I give allows me not to worry about Tarat HaMishpacha. The minyan that I go to allows me to cheat my business. If a person feels that way, then the person's never going to come around and do what's right. That's what Eliyahu Ravi meant. Im Hashem Elokim lechu acharav, im Baal lechu acharav. Take your pick. How do you want to live? Do we console ourselves by dwelling and focusing on our good deeds and looking at them as compensation for our wicked behavior? Many observant Jews set limits. They make compromises with the Torah. It's as if a person standing in front of the Luchot, the commandments. We got them here. We got them right here. Good. love speaking in the synagogue, really got the commandments right behind me. And now I can split things in half. Look at that. There's law, and there's tzitzah. There's don't, and there's kill. Is that what it means? Oh, it means don't kill. Oh, but there's don't, and there's kill. I can take my pick. Law, there's don't, and there's signal, and there's steal. Sometimes I don't, and sometimes I steal. I'm keeping the Ten Commandments. We said ourselves, look at the smile we got here. How foolish. How could anybody read the Torah that way? Well, it's like the guy in the neighborhood who we make believe we don't see. As he leaves to go to work on Shabbat in his car, he kisses the mezuzah on the door. Gemara Berachot says, Ganara, the thief, the thief, Apu Machtarta, on the doorway of the tunnel of the cellar that he's breaking into the house, the Hamara Kare, he prays to Hashem to help him succeed. Know anybody like that? Thief, as he enters the tunnel to rob, prays to Hashem to help him succeed. Everyone has a good side and a bad side. And it's within us since the days of Adam. And we must choose. Our job is to learn to be consistent with Hashem. Ahasuerus is considered to be a dummy. Tipesh. He usurped the power. His domain was 127 nations. He survived where the wise, in quotes, Haman fell. So why was he characterized as a stupid king? Tipesh. You know why? Because he was inconsistent. He killed his wife, Vashti, because his favorite counselor, Haman, told him to do so. And he killed his favorite counselor, Haman, because his wife, the Queen Esther, told him to do so. A wise man or woman is someone who is firm in their belief, unswerving in their observance, and certain in their conviction. That person is sure that I'm right. Now, it may sound difficult to achieve, but the nature of Yaakov, the Ish Emet, man of truth, is our national character. In Lavangarti, I live with the bad. Tayag mitzvot shamati, but I keep my mitzvot. We call Yisrael, as I said, Yasharel, because we're steady. And that's the secret of our survival. Let me tell you a story, because I like to end with something you remember. It's about a Jew. Not the greatest, not the smallest, just a Jew. Who demonstrated the most mind-boggling self-sacrifice because that's what the halakha demanded. It was Rosh Hashanah in Auschwitz. A Jew approaches the rabbi, who's also a prisoner in the camp, with a very difficult halachic question. The Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, set a decree. They needed 500 Jewish children to burn in the ovens. This man's son was one of those chosen for cremation. The father told the rabbi, "Rabbi, I have some money hidden away for when they drag me from my home. And it's probably enough to bribe a German officer and get my son back alive." But I'm worried, Rabbi. Because if I succeed in bribing and saving my son, they'll only have 499 children. And they'll have to find another one to take his place in the ovens to complete the quota. Rabbi, he asked, does the halakha say I can or I cannot bribe the officer? The rabbi was silent. He refused to answer. The father persisted. Rabbi, you're the rabbi. I have to know what the halakha says. What does Hashem expect me to do? What does the Torah want me to do? The rabbi broke down in tears. And in hysterics, he told the man, you're not allowed to save your son with the life of another. And they both cried themselves to sleep. The next morning, the rabbi and the rest of the inmates in the camp gathered together to say the Rosh Hashanah prayers. And the children were burned during the prayers. That father fainted. Now forget how strong he was. Is it imaginable that anyone could come to even ask for such a ruling? That must be a book called Responses from the Holocaust. Amazing questions asked by Jews during this hard time in our history. This man knew no compromise. His life was one of Torah without contradiction. He was a gibor. Our job, my friends, is to learn our job. Our task is to choose our side. Our position has to be one of certainty. We have to face the truth, live the truth, and eliminate contradiction from our lives. One thing I can tell you, we have the power to do it. But you have to do it. And Hashem will judge each one. The fee, ma, shu.